the Kids Health Network, the health and psychology podcast for parents and carers of children.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Kids Health Network podcast. My name is Andrew, and today I'm joined by the wonderful Tash Critter, who I've now known for quite a while. Tash is the director of the Little Wooden Toy Box, and we will talk about this website, an amazing resource, during today's podcast. She is a designer of the Letter Basics resources, the Little Wooden Toy Box, as I mentioned, but most importantly, she is a mum of two teens with autism spectrum disorder, ADHD, and PDA, which is extreme demand avoidance. So her life experiences, have really helped her to develop some of these resources. And that's the most important aspect of this. Tash's background is also in teaching, from kindy through to year seven, as well as special additional needs. And this combined with over 10 years of early intervention. She's an expert in understanding difficult behaviors and why they occur. She also is interested in understanding how emotional regulation and sensory input impacts both us as parents and our children, whether they're diagnosed or not, and developing, implementing, and managing resources and coping strategies to make home life calmer and more organized. And I'm certainly going to take some notes today for our home life, because that's one thing that I know is a lot of parents are struggling with at the moment, is creating that calm home life. Thanks for joining me today, Tash.
Hello.
Hello. Welcome.
Yay, this is exciting.
Tash, tell me firstly about the Little Wooden Toy Box. What is it?
Okay, so Little Wooden Toy Box has evolved over the years. So we do the educational resources, focusing on emotions, emotional regulation, routines, difficult behaviours, sensory play, and fine motor skills. So a lot of areas where kids and families are really struggling right now, especially after COVID as well, but not just that. The introduction of iPads over the last 5 to 10 years, we're seeing the results as far as kids aren't playing the same way that they used to, so they're not building those fine and gross motor skills. So we've got the resources, which that has been a heavy focus over the last probably 5 to 7 years, but now we're moving into that training space. So everything that I've learned from teaching and then all of this early intervention and just general life experience, bringing that in to, I guess, show and teach other parents and teachers, speechies, OTs, how this actually looks, and looking a bit deeper, I suppose, to understand the difficult behaviours, what's going on when kids are actually playing, the importance of play, and teaching the concepts as well as providing the resources to back that up. Does that make sense?
It does. It does. Yeah. So I've had a look through some of the resources that you've shown me, and they are absolutely amazing. I mean, you have put in so much work into this. It must have been, it's years of work. And so, I guess, how do people find these resources? What would prompt them to go and use them? Like, is it when they're having a tough time? Is it good for all parents? Is it good for teachers? Like, who would be accessing these on typically?
Yeah, sure. So I guess as far as fine motor skills, we're getting families, whether they're neurotypical, whether the kids are neurotypical or have additional needs, they're often referred to us from teachers, because the teachers are really struggling in the classroom now with kids that just don't have the basic skills to hold a pen or cut out. So that's one side of the business, and it's all learning through play. So we have loads and loads of activities. That's why I put so much effort into the printables and the design side of things, because I really want it to be fun. We really want the kids engaged, because when they are, then you're avoiding that task avoidance, I suppose. So many kids, because they know they're not good at it, they then avoid the task. But we really want to bring play right into it to keep these kids engaged, to avoid those behaviours that we're seeing in later years. So that's as far as the classroom and the fine motor skills. For emotional regulation, I think there's a lot more kids out there that would benefit and families that would benefit from this that don't actually know about it yet. So just understanding, you know, when we think our kids are being naughty or in the classroom when they're distracted, looking a bit deeper and understanding the behavior, and then once you understand it, you can then build some empathy for what that kid is going through. And instead of having punishments or disciplines or consequences, whatever else, actually understanding what is going on for the kid, getting to the root cause of the issue and helping them that way. Did I answer that question, or did I go off on a tangent there?
No, that's just, you know, the crux of what I think we can and should be doing better is rather than just keeping things superficial and treating kids as their behaviors and as they present, but we do need to dig deeper and we do need to invest that time. So I think that's a really good insight into why you might create a resource like this. It allows parents to spend that time with the child to understand their emotions a bit better, and for the child to communicate those emotions in a different way, not necessarily through words. It might be through activities, through play, and craft, I noticed as well, and you know, all different ways, mindfulness, and these strategies are, you know, great for all different ages as well. So it depends on the age of the child. Young children really struggle and struggle to communicate how they're feeling, and I find that hard in my consultations, is just asking how you're feeling. Most kids will just say I'm good, but really there's a lot more going on under the surface than meets the eye, and that often is why these things are so useful. Is it pretty much like I see it as a bridge between the health professionals, maybe the psychologists, OT, speech therapists, and home and school and home? Is that kind of a way to look at this, as, you know, extra tools you could be doing while you're waiting on therapy or in between therapy?
Yeah, definitely. Yep. If you actually go to our values, I'm pretty sure it's on the website. That was one of our values or mission statements, to bridge the gap between professionals, early childhood educators, and parents. And yeah, especially for so many kids struggling with anxiety. I saw your post on LinkedIn this morning, like 2 in 3 kids are struggling with anxiety at the moment. So it's not just those neurodiverse kids, but so many kids are struggling with this. And, you know, those waiting for a diagnosis, the waiting lists are so long that these are resources that you as a parent can use. And I wish I had have had this 10 years ago. Like, it really would have affected how I parented. But also, even as a teacher, we're not taught this. And I know speechies and OTs aren't taught this. So as professionals, we're reading kids' behavior, not understanding why we're seeing things, judging it on surface level, and just not helping these kids. Whereas if we just sit back a little bit, taught, and then look at things differently, you parent differently, you teach differently. So I think that's really important as well. So even if you, you know, left the resources out of it, the actual information in the training courses that comes with each of the packs is really valuable for you to implement at home or in the classroom or in the clinic, wherever you are. So it's pretty adaptable across the board, but especially parents at home. When you, I guess as a parent, especially when you're not getting sleep, when you're being screamed at all day, you know, you often don't have the brain space. Well, why would you? Why would you know to look at things differently? So when someone has already been there and done that for a good 10 years and can then give you that insight, you then change your expectations, I suppose. There's something that you shift when you look at things differently. And I guess when you drop the expectations, allow yourself like time to stop and look and see why behaviors might be happening, then it empowers you to deal with it in a different way.
It's so true. With the tools, like, the do you have a specific one you could just talk about, just to sort of give parents understanding of what they might expect when they use your tools? What would be one that you find useful, or that's popular?
The emotional regulation one would be my favorite, and that we run through, you know, all the different parts of sensory processing disorders. So your five senses, but also including your additional two senses, which are proprioception, so the way your body moves in space, and interception. That's something I'm still learning a lot about with my girl. So that's how we process our internal body signals and how we process our emotions, understanding how sensory, my screens and everything just turned off.
Oh,
no,
you're
still
there.
Good. I need to move my mouse. I'm sorry.
That's okay. You're still there.
Oh, dear. So, yeah, understanding how our sensory profile. So through this training, we're not just focusing on your kid. We're focusing on you as a parent or as a teacher or as a therapist. So actually stopping and going through every section of your sensory profile, your likes, your dislikes, sensory seeking behaviors, sensory aversions, because we all have them. You don't have to have sensory processing disorder or autism or a specific diagnosis to relate to this, but in doing that, you build that understanding and you build that empathy to then be able to see your child's experience differently. So for an example, my boy hates the sun, always hated the sun. So whenever he was in the car, it's just screaming the whole way, and it's still enough for a meltdown these days. And that's not something I can do anything about or change, other than maybe change the times of day we go out, so we're not traveling when the sun's bright. It's got two pairs of sunnies in the car, so there's practical tools and strategies and ideas. So your situation is not going to be the same, but there's a ton of tools, strategies, and things that you can implement based on you know, different sensory preferences in your house. Does that make sense?
Yeah, so it's adaptable to the needs of each family. And it teaches parents and novices like myself in this area, like, you know, how to engage their child in talking about emotions and behaviors, and and how to explain it at it in a child-friendly way, and what to do about it. So, you know, that these are things that, you know, we don't get a manual about when we start parenting. And so any strategy is helpful. And these are quite evidence-based as well, is what I noticed, is that, you know, these are actually useful in the, and I see them being used in psychology therapy. And I'm reading a lot about mindfulness and the important role of that with child anxiety. And so all these things are evidence-based and so are potentially helpful. And if it doesn't, you know, there might be another tool that you can try. There's not just one tool in this package that you have. So, you know,
there are lots.
I am still going through it. So yeah, as an experienced teacher of children with special needs and also an experienced parent, like, what advice would you have for parents going through a difficult time with their child?
I guess my biggest thing would be, you know, when your child is screaming or having a meltdown or however that looks like for your child, that they still are communicating and learning to understand what they are communicating. So I guess letting go of, that's not the behavior I want, therefore it's naughty. Does that make sense? So I guess stepping back and watching, and look, when you've got a little one, you know, especially under that 0 to 5 was horrible in our house, just so much crying. My boy would melt down for 3 hours at a time, stop for 20 minutes, then start the next 3 hours. So that's very difficult to stop and look and try and figure out what's going on, because there's so much going on. But if you can, what am I trying to say here? Seeing things for... No, I've lost my train of thought.
I think you're saying step back and, you know, it's like put your life mask on, put your oxygen on first. Step back and see things broadly around what is going on. I mean, it's hard in that moment. Parents tell me how hard it is, and I've witnessed it myself, but like you, it's very anxiety provoking in that moment of the meltdown and the screaming and the tantrum and the and the fighting that might be happening in your house, and it's chaos. And, you know, our natural reaction is to just jump in and control that moment. But that moment is not controllable. It's actually it needs time, and it needs for you to step back and try and think about what might be going on and what might be triggering it off. And for first thing for me is really just to step aside, because otherwise I get too worked up myself. And step aside, take a breather, look after yourself first. And often the discussions around the challenges the child is facing don't happen in that moment. Usually they don't. You know, the child's brain is in a bit of a fuzz, and they don't know why they're actually like that. They're just, you know, in another zone, really, another world. So whatever you can do to just calm them, whether it's sit with them, hug them, divert the energy elsewhere outside, or into play, or give them a safe space to go to, then reevaluate later, and debrief later. That's sort of what I've learned from talking to parents. But in terms of difficult patches, like, these difficult patches can last weeks, months, years, and you've experienced that. And so, like, where would you go for help? Where did you go to get help?
Oh, that's the thing. There wasn't. So, like, from what you just said, the stepping back and looking after yourself, that's what we cover in the training as well, as far as keeping your cup full. And you can't do that unless you understand what your triggers as a parent are as well. And, you know, when you look after yourself and kind of in the moment go, this is okay, and look, when they're melting down, there is nothing you can do anyway. So often writing that out, dropping the expectation that you need to fix everything all the time, or as parents, we love to join in. So you increase your voice and, you know, raising your voices, joining in, but really, you know, stepping back and getting the kid to join your calm instead of you joining their chaos. That's been a big one. As far as help, when my boy was during that stage, which was up until 5 years old, the screaming for 3 hours, stopping for 20, the first person I got help from was the LAC, and he was about 4 years old. So we must have been going through the diagnosis process then, or he must have just been diagnosed. But the only way I could talk on the phone was sitting on the floor with my back to the door, with them bashing and screaming on the other side of it. And it was a few of those phone calls where they finally realized that I needed help, and they got them into daycare. From there, we had amazing speech therapist, Christine Bosch. I don't know where she is now, but she was up in Joondalup, and she understood the sensory. So she was the first person to squish my kid and apply that deep pressure, that proprioception. And that was amazing. I remember that day. And you could wrap him up like a sausage roll, and he'd stop screaming in about 20 seconds. Whereas I'd not managed to stop the screaming for 3 hours before that. And meltdowns for my kid were, distraction, talking through, that was just not even an option. Most of the time it would end in exhaustion and sleep. That proprioception, that's a big one that I'm, you know, trying to help parents with as well, that deep pressure, squeezing your kid, which some kids will hate, but overall it's a great strategy.
That's a great tip. Yeah, it's a great tip. There's a lot of kids out there that are sensory seeking and not getting that sensory input, and that's where we get to screens. You know, that's where we lead to, you know, that they seek that dopamine from playing games and watching iPads, and you know, that often then at the end of that leads to withdrawal of that dopamine and a meltdown. Yeah. So it's we've all gone through it. Sensory seeking, and that's a really good tip. I've heard other parents use that. You know, the sort of the big wrapping up and tight pressure, squeezing their hands, you know, whatever it might be, you know, just being there and trying to calm that situation with whatever might work. And it's not always going to work, but it's just things that we can do safely that help children. So I really like that. Now, this is the hard part. I want to know about you as a parent. Like, I am inspired by parents who have children with ADHD, ASD, mental illness. Like, it's it's such a tough journey, and you have to be incredibly strong for your children, and you know, sometimes put on a brave front to and advocate for them. I just think, you know, and this is going out to all the parents out there that do go through this. I just feel really touched by the work that you do to look after your children and help them through the system, because boy, is it tough. It's a really tough system. And then parenting children with ADHD and ASD is one of the hardest things you could possibly do. I think it's probably one of the hardest jobs in life, and parenting on its own is tough. So tell me, how do you manage to look after yourself? How do you cope with it? What do you do that helps?
I guess it's taken a long time to figure that out, because again, when you're dealing with this day in, day out, especially by yourself, there's no time for you, but you're supposed to find time for you to be able to better look after your kids, and it's just a vicious cycle, I suppose. Mm. I found CrossFit about 3 or 4 years ago. I never thought I'd catch myself dead in a gym, and I didn't actually. It was outdoors first, and then a friend dragged me along, and I actually really loved it. It was when you're a single mum and you're making all the decisions at home, and then you're a director of your own company, so you're making all your decisions there, just going somewhere where I was told what to do. Mm. And that's all I needed. And then obviously the physical with your hormones and whatever else. So there's that. I've got my church as well, so that has helped a massive amount as far as looking after me. And then more recently, the Heroes program, again, run out of Myrie Church, Heroes Academy. So that's not my thing, but I volunteer there. Just being able to give back to kids in the community. So everything that I've learned over the years, and, you know, giving this back to other parents. So knowing what it's like in that 0 to 5 stage where there just isn't any help. No one wants to babysit your kids. Even family at that stage, they were just hard work. Mm. So being able to give back now, there's something in that, you know, looks after my mental health as well. To be able to let everything I've learned day in, day out through all the screaming, all the rubbish bits, there's plenty of good bits as well, but to come to a place where I can use that to input back into someone else's life, both the kid and knowing what it means to the family in looking after their kids for them.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, it's really good. Sorry. Yeah, it's really good. Yeah. And in investment of time, I talk to parents about their own mental health quite often, and I can see it in their eyes when things aren't going well. I can tell. And just checking in, you know, like I think parents forget to look after themselves and invest so much time into their kids and families that, you know, it's easy to forget, but it is an investment. And I know we don't have time. No one has time to do this, but actually creating that time, locking in a weekly exercise session. You know, I go to RPM, like I love it. You know, the spin class, it's great. Just having that 1 hour spin. Yes. It's
sorry.
Endorphin pumping. It's so good. Like just having a 1 hour block of a week, whatever it is an investment of time, but it's so rewarding to have that for yourself. And it's as good as probably medication or whatever it might be that we try and give you. It's as good as that to have that. And social connections, the other thing is reaching out to a friend, touching base with them, connecting. To finish on a positive, like what's the best thing about parenting children with neurodiversity?
Oh, there's so many things. For all the crap bits that you go through, it's when you see the personality come out, when your kids actually say something funny that really makes you laugh. My girl just comes out with, she's brutal. And I actually have a list of different stories on our website, and you'll understand what I mean if you go there and have a look. But just, they see the world differently, and they don't mean to make you laugh half the time, but some of the stuff that comes out of their mouth is hilarious.
Yeah, it's great.
Yeah, and you've got to choose to laugh. Like, you can't sit in the corner rocking and crying all day.
No.
And just to enjoy those moments when they come.
Yeah. I love it. I always tell parents who have children with, you know, ADHD and ASD, They're my quirkiest, funniest, funnest patients. And the chats that we have, I remember forever. Like, it's just so, it's so awesome. And I tell the kids this, like, you guys are awesome. You know, it's, you have so much potential with this awesomeness of fun that you have about you. And, and like, don't let that hold you back. The fact that you have this label that, you know, someone's given you, a health professional's given you, it doesn't need to hold you back. In fact, embrace it. It's such a amazing tool that you have that you can use in the future, and let's help you get to that point. So, you know, so that's exactly, I agree with you. You know,
we embrace the crazy in our house.
Yeah, embrace the crazy. yeah. So Tasha's website is littlewoodentoybox.com.au. Yeah, is that right? I'll put the website in the notes of this podcast. Lots more info on that website. It's full of things, and I've I'm clicking around it now. There's so much on there about play therapy, about fine motor skills, about emotions. So, you know, lots of stuff on there, and then to and then the resources that can be purchased to help, as we've talked about today on the podcast. And I think you've said to me about NDIS as well. Is that something that can be funded by NDIS?
Yes, it is. Yes. So lots of people use it on their NDIS plans under core, preferably. Otherwise, you can get your OT or speechy to sign off at it under your capacity funding, as far as I understand, but you do need to double check that.
Yeah, that's great. Really good. Thanks so much, Tash, for joining me today. Really great to talk to you. No worries.
The Kids Health Network is brought to you by GP and my daddy, Dr. Andrew Leach. Thanks for tuning in, everybody.